Previously on the provability gap.
What can you do if you have a police department and a DA that aren't providing the justice?
People need to understand that the criminal justice system is not here to give satisfaction to victims. We can't always make a criminal case out of a traumatic event.
It's still possible to make the case, and it's possible for the prosecution to do something that it frequently does, which is try to educate a jury.
Last time, we heard some of the reasons why it's so difficult for prosecutors to secure a conviction in a rape case. One is the way the Texas Penal Code defines sexual assault. It's pretty restrictive, and it can make it hard to prove the crime happened beyond a reasonable doubt. But we also learned that prosecutors hold an enormous amount of power when it comes to deciding what cases to take to trial. And not pursuing a lot of those tougher cases is often a choice. But it's important to remember that prosecutors are frequently basing their decisions on what they've seen from juries. And juries are made up of the public, people just like you and me. This means we can't just look at the criminal justice system alone to understand why sexual assaults are rarely prosecuted. We also need to look at ourselves. This is the Provability Gap. Part 4, the public.
All right. Counsel, it is 5:17.
It's January 2019. Austin City Council is winding down one of its regular meetings. But there's one last item on the agenda.
Then we have a significant number of folks that have signed up to speak on this.
Most of the people signed up to speak are wearing yellow bandanas, a sign of solidarity for sexual assault survivors. Marina Garrett is one of them.
I know survivors that have never been contacted by their detectives, who never got the results from their rape kits. I know survivors who were told their tortures sounded consensual. More importantly, I don't know a single survivor whose case made it into a courtroom. And I don't know a single survivor that would say the Austin Police Department or the DA helps them find justice or healing in any way.
Garrett is advocating for a proposal from Councilmember Allison Alter, calling for a third-party evaluation of how the Austin Police Department investigates sexual assaults.
Passing this resolution will give survivors across Austin hope that the people who are supposed to protect us want to do better and want to do the right thing. Because right now, for us, it feels like we live in a city of disbelief, in a city that doesn't care.
And test this. So check, check. And can I just have you tell me what you ate for breakfast this morning?
I did not eat breakfast.
Again?
Again. I woke up.
The last time I spoke with Marina Garrett, it was 2018, and she was still just trying to make it through her last semester at UT. But I wanted to check back in and see what had happened since then. Congratulations on graduation.
Thank you.
Tell me what that feels
Thank
like.
Thank you. It feels great. I completed my senior thesis, so I was able to graduate with departmental honors in cultural anthropology.
The focus of her thesis was on rape culture in America. Yeah. Garrett also recently got a job working with rape survivors. In fact, much of Garrett's life has been and continues to be consumed with advocacy ever since she reported her assault. I've only been at this for 8 months. And I learned a lot since I first sat down with Garrett last year. Just like her, I was left with questions about her case.
The very first interview I did when I was still an anonymous survivor, someone with the police said, you know, 9 times out of 10, this doesn't hinge on DNA.
In the end, though, Garrett's case would be declined for prosecution because there was no DNA evidence. But she says her work as an advocate has made her better educated on sexual assault investigations. She knows now that DNA is only needed to prove the identity of the suspect or if there was any sexual contact. And both of those things had already been settled in Garrett's case. Her attacker was identified and told police the sex was consensual. And according to Travis County District Attorney Margaret Moore, DNA evidence
is of less importance, perhaps no importance whatsoever, if the only issue is whether or not the conduct was consensual.
Garrett says she's heard this same thing from countless advocates over the years.
You know, they all just say facts that go against my case. I'll just say, you know, DNA isn't needed for most of these, and I was told for 2 years that it was needed. And so it's just really hard to do this work sometimes.
Garrett says all of this has left her convinced that some sort of bias played a role in how police and prosecutors handled her case.
I absolutely do believe that it was discrimination and that it was everything we say in this lawsuit.
It's been more than a year since Garrett joined a class action lawsuit alleging the city and county mishandled the cases of female victims because of gender discrimination. There's a lot said in this lawsuit, but one point Garrett's lawyers make over and over has to do with the one sexual assault case that went before a jury in 2017. The victim in that case was a man. His rapist was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison. It turned out the man convicted had a history of sexual assault charges, including at least two women who alleged he raped them in 2013 and 2014.
I don't know what the difference was, except that in one case, the victim was a man.
That's Elizabeth Myers. She's one of the lawyers representing Garrett and seven other victims in the lawsuit.
I think the presumption is a man would never say that he was sexually assaulted unless he truly was. And there's a gender discrimination presumption that's not true of women.
But police and prosecutors in Austin and Travis County are adamant the only reason these cases do not move forward is either because a victim refused to participate or there's simply not enough evidence. But Garrett doesn't buy it.
It just makes you wonder, what is enough evidence? What is enough? What do we as survivors have to go through for them to think we deserve justice?
Just the question implies the complexity of the crime.
That's Noelle Bush Amendares. She's a professor at UT Austin School of Social Work and the director of UT's Institute on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. So I asked Bush Amendares if gender discrimination plays a role in the outcome of sexual assault cases.
Our research shows yes, and I think you're going to find individual cases where women have been mistreated and their cases have been very poorly handled. And you're going to find police officers and prosecutors who have handled cases beautifully.
Bush Amendares says there are a lot of reasons for why sexual assaults are rarely prosecuted. Gender bias is just one of them. But she says if people really want to change the way these crimes are handled,
I think we have to move upstream to the idea of what is it about our society that allows this to happen.
She says because this crime affects so many people, we can't just look at the criminal justice system alone. Bush Amendares says this needs to be more broadly situated as a social problem. She says, stop and think about the Me Too movement. It exposed just how pervasive sexual assault is, and that's caused a huge shift in the way people think about this crime.
I think every time that sexual assault gets onto the public agenda, it opens a dialogue.
And that dialogue can be powerful.
This morning, we continue our hearing on the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh.
Take Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court confirmation hearings in 2018. Stanford professor Christine Blasey Ford came forward and accused Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her in high school. For many, this was a defining moment of the Me Too movement and the country's long overdue reckoning with sexual violence.
With what degree of certainty do you believe Brett Kavanaugh assaulted you?
100%.
For others, it was an example of how the Me Too movement had gone too far.
My family and my name have been totally and permanently destroyed.
No matter where you stand on the issue, there was an overwhelming response from the public. And it sent a stark message to sexual assault survivors. According to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, the organization saw a 338% increase in calls to the National Sexual Assault Hotline during the hearings. And the day after the hearing was the hotline's busiest day in its 24-year history. If society wants to see any meaningful change, says Bush Amendatis, communities need to allocate more time and resources to better understanding this crime.
We need think tanks on this. We need persuasion groups not making policy on this right away, but the idea that we would debate this rigorously.
Right now, she says, we simply don't have the legal mechanisms in place to unpack the more difficult aspects of sexual assault, like how to define consent. And Bush Amendatis says it will likely stay that way until society makes it a priority.
Often people say, well, this isn't rocket science. And I say, it's not. It's a lot harder than rocket science. You try dealing with human beings on a mass scale and tell me how it goes for you.
Passing this resolution will give survivors across Austin hope that the people who are supposed to protect us want to do better and want to do the right thing. Because right now, for us, it feels like we live in a city of disbelief, in a city that doesn't care.
We're back at the city council meeting. Council members are getting ready to vote on a resolution calling for an independent review into how sexual assault cases are investigated in Austin. Public testimony is over, and it's time for council members to respond. Each of their microphones is tied with a yellow bandana to express their support for survivors. Councilmember Natasha Harper Madison even used this moment to come out publicly as a sexual assault survivor herself for the first time.
My experience with that, and let's just say I was less than satisfied by how it went, my experience with that led me to know for certain that we needed effective, integrity-driven leaders to change policies that made people's lives livable.
The resolution passed unanimously.
With this resolution, I invite my colleagues to go the Austin way and lead a transformation that will help our city and others turn the corner towards justice.
Councilmember Allison Alter told her colleagues they would not be judged by this resolution alone. They'll be judged by the actions they take when the results of the review come in. It's a moment survivors and their advocates are anxiously awaiting.
It's not over. This is just one win. We still have so many more that we need to accomplish.
Marina Garrett calls the review a first step toward justice. Are you hopeful?
I definitely am. I think some days it's hard to be hopeful. It definitely is. But in the bigger picture, I am. You know, I have to kind of step back and think about the wins that we've made and the fact that we now have city council all putting yellow bandanas in support of us. You know, we now have so many people coming out and speaking so positively about survivors. And so I have to be hopeful because we have made so many people listen to us. And so even though it's, you know, not directly about me and about my case, I am hopeful for survivors in Austin.
We've spent the last 4 days talking about this crime, and we've only barely scratched the surface. There are thousands of stories of sexual assault, and they're all different. When I started the series, I told you that creating a system that is survivor-focused won't be easy. It won't be. But maybe, if we spend more time listening to the stories of the people who've lived through this, it just might help us get a little closer. You've been listening to The Provability Gap. You can hear all 4 parts of this series by subscribing to The Provability Gap podcast. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. This series was reported by me, Nadia Hamdan, and edited by Matt Largy and Stephanie Federico. Special thanks to all the survivors who shared their stories and to everyone who helped make this series possible. The Provability Gap is a production of KUT Austin. I'm Nadia Hamdan.